for employees, wherever they are. The private public sector is becoming a problem. And I have no doubt in my mind that we aren't treating people on a selected basis, as far as I'm concerned, because I think there's a lot of private contracts that have addressed this issue a long time ago. But I'm not convinced that actually they can show a cost. They may have the insurance company lay a premium on them, but actuarially, I have some question whether it's a group that's there in the first place. And we aren't talking a pass to Medicare, we're talking up to Medicare.
Right.
And I think it's fair, and I bet you in the next 10 years, you're going to see this as a universal notion, simply because of the increased health costs. You can't have someone, they have some group insurance, some way they can hang on to it if for some reason they've had to leave it. So I favor the bill. Make no apologies.
Madam Chair.
Further comments, Senator Simmons.
I agree with Senator Day that eventually this may be a universal application, that everyone is given some kind of a medical insurance by the government at our expense. But my big objection is that in the meantime, we're singling out only those individuals who are currently employed by the government. Now, many contracts apparently do provide for a continuation of health care insurance, but many, many, many do not. And as far as the selection against risk, if you look at a premium table for health care costs, other than on a whole group basis, you'll find that for each age group of approximately 4 to 5 years, there is an increase in premium, which is an indication that the costs of those groups are higher. So you get into someone who's 50 to 65 years old, and you've got a much higher cost than someone who's 20 to 35. And it's impossible to spread those costs without coming into some kind of an increase in premium on the overall.
Well, okay.
Madam Chairman, yeah. I'd be happy to join you in a separate companion bill that make it a universal, because I have no problem moving into the entire universe on this, because I think it's an issue we're going to have to address one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Find the billions of dollars it cost then.
Well, I guess we do have, I have talked with Senator Day, and if we get into some backwater here, we've got a whole Senate bill that we can work on to deal with it in the whole trust fund area and see whether we can arrive at some better solution.
Yeah, I'd like to see some people have the opportunity to secure through some type of equity fund for retirement, not just before 65, but after 65, and have an equity build up to protect them. Senator Cohen and I have talked about that, and if we finish our workload, we're going to try to bring it back. But
okay.
Call for the question.
Call the roll, please, Karen. On that.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Motion carried. Okay, we have Senator Hanna here and Representative Peterson. So on, let's take up Senate Bill 813.
Turn the gavel over to Senator Fry and come outside, please.
Senator Fry. Somehow I thought it was different in the Senate. You know, House committees do this, but I'd understood that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Len Hannon, State Senator, District 26, and I have with me Representative Nancy Peterson, District 52, and Mr. John Gervais, who represents the Oregon Bed and Breakfast Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we introduced this legislation at the request of a bed and breakfast in Ashland called the Edinburgh Lodge. This is, as you're aware of, in Ashland and other areas of the state now, is becoming a unique way for tourists and people who are vacationing to stay at a reasonable rate and reasonable cost, and yet still have the niceness of almost living like in a home-like situation. These bed and breakfasts wanted to provide a glass of brandy with an evening meal, or provide a glass of brandy at bedtime. And we're told by the OLCC that they'd have to provide themselves and obtain licensing just like any other business. What this bill does, Senate Bill 813 does, it provides a new category of licensure and provides a bed and breakfast license at the total cost of $5 per guest unit. In other words, if you had a guest house with four bedrooms, your total license fee would be $20 per year. I think it's a reasonable request. It certainly helps the issue of tourism, and I would strongly urge its adoption. There is one other thing that I would like to request of the committee, Madam Chairperson, and that is that if the committee does take action upon this, we would like to have the name as Representative Nancy Peterson as a sponsor. Representative Peterson was called out of town at the time this bill was filed, was unable to sign on as a co-sponsor, and it would be appreciated if her name could be added as a co-sponsor. So with that, I'll turn it over.
Thank you. I'm Representative Nancy Peterson, District 52. I think Senator Hannon pretty much summed up the bill. I think it's important to note that although the bed and breakfast would be serving alcoholic beverages, particularly wine and beer, this would not be open to consumption for anyone coming in from the outside, for employees on the premises, merely for the guests there. In Ashland in particular, the Shakespeare Festival continues till quite late at night, and many of the places where people might like to stop and get a glass of wine or something after the play are so crowded that people can't get in. I think this would solve a number of problems for guests who do enjoy staying in Ashland and would like to have that added benefit. But I'd like to continue that I don't see that this bill is just for Ashland people. There are bed and breakfasts all over the state of Oregon. Tourism is a thriving industry, and I think any legislation that increases tourism is beneficial to Oregon. So I would like to add my support and encourage your support for Senate Bill 813.
Madam Chairman?
Senator Day.
Senator Hannon, I'm not sure you included in this bill brandy more than your tour. I guess I like a good brandy. And is your intention to include brandy?
Well, it doesn't pertain to Coors, if that's what you're concerned about.
No. Look, I really wouldn't even believe that.
We understood legislative council was designing the language to include a separate category as bed and breakfast license. It would pertain to this. Now, if you want specific wine, brandy, or liqueur listed, then certainly I would assume that we would have to take that by amendment.
Okay, I guess what I'm asking you is, I was seriously asking you, do you want brandy covered in for bed and breakfast?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. I don't think it is included.
Okay, legislative council indicated it would be, but
okay, well, the OLCC
would do it for rule.
But we'll double check it.
For the comments, I guess I have a question. Have you checked this out with OLCC, and they are not signed up today to testify, so I wonder whether they've
I believe I've seen Mr. Schmidt present here when we walked in, Madam Chairperson. We did consult with the OLCC, and that was on whose instruction we pursued this special licensing language.
Okay, another question. Our bed and breakfast operations, do they have, a business license now, or how does that
yes.
work? There is a formal license to do business in that format.
Yes, and I might also indicate that I don't know what other cities charge, but as an example, in the city of Ashland, where a bed and breakfast wants to be licensed, I believe the city police charge something like a $100 fee to investigate them.
Okay, so it is a formalized process, and not just Joyce Cohn who could go out and decide. Today I'm a bed and breakfast person, and I'll go to LLCC and get my license and be able to charge people come to my house for wine.
They would have to go through the local requirements within that city or wherever it was located.
Yes, John Gervais is
Yes, thank you, Senator Cohn, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Gervais, and I'm representing the Northwest Country Inn. I gave you one of our pamphlets. I represent some bed and breakfast, not all of them, but I'm here speaking today on their behalf. A bed and breakfast basically has to go through a lot of different approval procedures, for instance, health regulations in terms of adequate kitchen protections and bathrooms and other kinds of things like that. If they have a swimming pool, they have to go through permits for that. It isn't just, as you mentioned, you can't just set up and declare yourself open.
Yeah, I just want to make that clear for the record that what we're doing is to move ahead with this bill.
Madam Chairman, some of these places you have listed, sometimes it's talking like a bed and breakfast place, like the Columbia River Gorge Hotel.
Yeah, I think he said
we have several bed and breakfasts in our organization, not all of them, however, are delightful places, however.
Do you have anything further to add, John?
I don't think so. I think the legislators have covered it very carefully.
Madam Chair.
Senator Otto.
Question I have, the $5 goes to the OLCC for guest unit, right? Then the other question I have, what if there's a local motel-hotel tax? Will they be subject to that tax?
They already are.
They already are.
Mm-hmm.
Percentage like every other facility.
Nothing would change.
No.
That's all it is. It just gives the flexibility when a guest comes in the evening, have a glass of sherry, or oftentimes a bed breakfast over the decanter of sherry setting up. People may help themselves if they so choose. And it's a secondary sort of thing, but it's a nice thing to be able to provide for your guests.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Yeah, I'm done. I noticed that one place here advertises complimentary wine.
In that particular brochure.
Right.
Probably it's not a bed and breakfast, though.
Well, it's Madison Inn Bed and Breakfast in Corvallis.
Probably won't be after 5 o'clock.
many of them apparently have beer and wine licenses because they're advertising liquor.
Senator Chair Cohn, if I may respond to that, I'm not sure I can respond to that. I think it's, in terms of bed and breakfast concept, it's that's sort of a traditional part of it. Some of them didn't realize it was a violation of the law. Just by,
well, they
have a liquor license.
Pardon me? They probably have a liquor license.
This one very well could. I'm not certain what it does, Senator, to be honest with you.
This has no indication of the number of rooms, but it looks just like a house.
5 rooms, I think.
5 rooms. Is it illegal to give away a glass of wine?
Yes. My understanding is.
Well, okay, Mr. Smith is here, and we'll ask that question of him. Is it illegal to give away a glass of wine? And whatever else, if you'd come forward, please. Yes.
I'm Dean Smith, Administrator of OLCC. It is not against the law to give away alcohol if it's truly given away. But if you've paid an admission price or a fee to enter the premises, as in this case, then that's part of the overhead, and they must have a license then. I would like to add, if I may.
Yes, please.
If Senator Hand wants to include brandy or any other distilled spirit, you come up against the constitutional limitation. We cannot license any place for distilled spirits unless they cook and serve food.
Oh. I have the word from you, Senator Hannon, and everybody else said, well, brandy is not that important. At least I get the sense in this bill we can get along without brandy for now anyway, and until we move into Senator Day's argument, and I'm going to ask him not to go into his discussion about how we have changed the entire system, because this does point out the kind of issue that we come up against repeatedly.
That's why it's written away.
Yes.
Okay. How do you feel about this bill, Mr. Smith?
Neutral.
Neutral. Well, more witnesses?
No, Jerry, I'd like a little technical information about how it will be handled.
Yes.
I would assume the place that only has four rooms and say they've got eight people and two-thirds of them or three-fourths of them stop at a restaurant the way back, we say, from the Ashland play, and when they get back they don't really care for a glass of wine. Is there any restriction on how long a bottle can stay open before it's served, or is there a deterioration of the product if the bottle is left open for a week or two before it's used up?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, we do not involve ourselves in sanitation or health questions. We are prohibited by statute. But to answer from my own personal knowledge, it varies with the type of beverage. If you take a distilled spirits, for instance, it will keep for many, many years. Fortified wines will keep for many years under reasonable conditions. A typical red wine will keep a much less time. A fragile white wine, it starts to deteriorate in a matter of hours. And of course, all of these are dependent on temperature, vibration, petroleum products being nearby, etc.
Thank you. I'm not quite that concerned or familiar with how it's how it deteriorates. Never seems to last that long. The other question I do have, if it were chocolate, then I'd be an expert.
I understand.
There's no indication in here as to how many accommodations can be in a bed and breakfast, and I noticed some of these that Mr. Gervais has advertised are fairly sizable. Would this enable a hotel, for example, to call itself a bed and breakfast home and operate under this license without getting another more expensive license?
Senator, as I read Section 1, it has a phrase, may be issued to the owner or operator of a private residence, etc. I presume that excludes hotels, motels.
Well, I suppose it would, but some of these pictured here look fairly sizable, and some of them now, in fact, do advertise that they have liquor available, so presumably they have a license.
Yeah, I think that those are not all bed and breakfast, but that's a good example, Mr. Gervais, of giving us more information than...
Yeah. There's only four in there that are bed and breakfast, three or four.
Yet one has 500 wines.
Well, they probably have a liquor license, and if they do, if they don't, then Mr. Smith ought to go do his job.
Maybe I'd better say
that. Okay, quickly, because we've got all this list.
If you get beyond a certain number of rooms and size, then you're going to have all kinds of bathrooms and size kitchens, and you're going to have health regulations that would make it impossible to survive just being a hotel unit itself without a restaurant and bar fully licensed.
Thank you,
Madam.
Okay,
thank
you.
I got a question.
Sam Fry's question.
Well, the reason for this bill is because either a bread and breakfast establishment cannot now get a wine and beer license, or it costs too much, one or the other. Is that the idea?
Right. The latter.
Probably cost
the latter. The latter. A wine and beer license costs...
Madam
Yes, 75.
Well, yeah, okay.
Why not just do a beer and wine license for a bed and breakfast operation? Could you tell me why you wouldn't just suggest that they get a beer and wine license?
We suggested that, and at least in one instance they replied that they didn't give away a fraction of the cost of such wine as we would charge them for the license. It's $250 a year for a typical license like that. And they felt the cost was too high.
Okay, so it's a cost issue. Yeah. Senator Simmons.
Mr. Smith, you indicated that they wouldn't give away that much. Are most of these people in giving it away and have
yes,
a license?
That's their view, but as I tried to explain
earlier... Well, I understand that there's some consideration, even though I might pay the same amount for my bed and breakfast as Senator Otto, but he might drink three glasses of wine, I won't have any if they gave him three. But the problem maybe then is more to make it legal to give the guest a glass of wine if he wishes it, rather than try to take a bottle and sell it.
Yes, sir, I believe that's what they're intending, is to legalize this process that is going on.
Yeah, that makes it much more clear to me.
Okay. Well, Penn, I haven't really looked at all the words, but I guess if we have OLCC who's neutral, and I don't have any problem with the concept of the bill. So if you want to move it, shall we move Senate Bill 813?
Yeah, I'll move Senate Bill 813 before they do that.
Okay, with the request that we have Representative Peterson's name added to the sponsors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, I don't see any for the amendments. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Hammond, you have Senate Bill 799 here as well. Do you want to wait?
I'm sure there was someone from the banking division that I'm supposed to have here to testify to tell.
Okay, if you don't mind, we'll leave
him. I can hold him back in his proper order.
Thank you. Just wanted to give you a chance if you wanted.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Okay, let's take up. I would like to clear the agenda of two items. Jerry Lubitz is here. It's my understanding that Senate Bill 709 and Senate Bill 356 have been resolved without the need of statutory change. So is Jerry here to say that before I move to table them?
Well, yeah, but I want to talk about that. I got one suggestion on 356 if you listen to it.
Okay.
The issue on 356, Madam Chairman, has been resolved as far as I'm concerned on that issue. But I had some constituents come to me, and I prepared amendments that would gut the bill, but it would reinstitute and cover approximately six people who are in the law enforcement data system staff, who I have a constituent who came to me, and they're not, they would put them under law enforcement, the Policemen and Firemen's Act, and they're sworn law enforcement people, have to be certified as law enforcement people. And you know, if the committee isn't willing to do that, that's fine. I just want to bring it. I have the amendments prepared. It seems fair to me that they are.
Okay, what I'd ask is that we have the amendments that we postpone until Thursday and take a look at.
That'd be swell.
But pass them out. In the meantime, I would move to, I do want to get other people's comments, Jerry's comments, and other people's on the amendments.
I just asked you, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. That's just what we're here.
There was a, could I ask another question?
Yes, Senator Day.
There's another bill, and I can't think of the number, but you heard the other day, and I was missing an action. I talked to the Oregon School Employees Association.
That was 443. It's not on the bill, but it's not on the, Senator and Otto's talked to me, and I think I'm receiving a letter asking for an interim study, and
you drag such a letter in?
And so I would, in fact, urge that we get a letter in place to, and this is the contracting out issue, to talk about whether people ought to be eligible for PERS.
You draft that
upon contracting out, and I do have a letter from Senator Otto, right?
Right. I'm waiting for the letter. I have not received it yet, but I did receive a telephone call from the one who I made the request.
Good. So we will get a letter drafted requesting that any interim study task force, or especially even I think the interim labor committee, ought to be in charge.
I gave you a copy of a letter, and if you could make that available to the whole committee, it was intended for the whole committee.
Yeah, and I think we'll sign it. We'll all,
sure.
We'll get it drafted so the committee members can sign it and send it to or those who care to at least. Okay?
That's a good solution.
Thank
that's
you. We'll take care of that one.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, Senate Bill 709 now. is a bill that, I understand it has been negotiated out through an ordinance in Clackamas County, Montmorel County. Jerry, is he back there? Would you like to come and tell us, yes, that it's been resolved in Montmorel County, so we can table this bill? Or are you going to say June was maybe not quite?
Madam Chairman, yes, it has been resolved, and the people have been giving credit for the time.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chairman.
Everybody moves to table 709. Call the roll, please, Karen.
Number seven?
Aye.
Number five?
Aye.
Motion carries, thank you.
That's the way we need to.
Now we have Senate Bill 370, which is a Senator Albion. Jerry, don't go away. This one is a survivorship bill that has an impact, 370, if you want to look at it. The note that we got from PERS is that this could be considered a one-person bill since all new members are paying a rate that would preclude them from any benefit under this bill. If seriously considered, contact PERS for cost estimate from actuary. And I know we have one bill that dealt with, that we had testimony that it was an inadvisable bill, and I guess I would ask Jerry for a minute or two to see whether the Senate Bill 370 falls in the same position or whether you think we ought to send that along to Ways and Means to consider whether the person ought to be able to buy into this.
Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is Jerry Davis, the Assistant Director of the Public Employees Retirement System. Under Senate Bill 370, as far as we can find, it did affect only the one employee who brought it to the line. There could be others. The reason for this is that that employee, as some other employees who have since left the system, when they belonged to the Multnomah County program, only contributed 2% of their salary, whereas those in PER reservoirs contributed 5, 6, or 7%. So what they're asking for here is that if an individual retires or dies, he's reached the age where he could retire, that benefit be computed under option 3. In my particular case, and in most cases, my wife's benefits under the death benefit would be far greater than option number 3. We could not find anybody in PERS who would be willing to take option number 3.
Okay.
Again, the reasoning for this individual is because they only paid about 2% into their program when they integrated into PERS. The long and the short of it is that this individual got a tremendous amount of benefit as far as retirement benefits are concerned for the little bit of dollars that they put into the Multnomah County system. Now what they would like to do is have a tremendous amount of death benefits that would be if they were to die before they reach retirement.
Okay. But I guess I'm not yet convinced that we have to necessarily send this down to Ways and Means or how that all fits. But let us look it over some more, Jerry, and we'll bring it up Thursday to decide whether we want to talk to Senator Otto and see whether we want to deal with this one a little bit later then. Thank you, Jerry.
Could I mention one other thing?
Yes, Senator Day.
We don't have it on the list, but I would like to request a study to propose some amendments to 883-1. I was missing during the hearing.
Okay, we'll take that up. That's up Thursday.
Okay, and I could give you amendments that so that people will all have them.
Yes, we have. Okay, now I guess I would like to go ahead and take up Senate Bills 637, 668, and 669.
Okay.
Did you say 637?
37, this is Triman's bill, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. talk about 637?
Yes, you may talk about 637. Senator Day.
One of the things that bothers me about this is we talk about, you know, issuing some type of obligations and anticipation of revenues, and I can't think of anything more dangerous for a local government. Some of this other, that's important, but, you know, at best, that transit funding is tenuous. And then to go out on a limb and issue some obligation on what you may or may not receive, I would think most administrators of a transit district would be a little concerned with that. But I don't know what the reaction of the rest of it is.
Madam Chair, there are certain restrictions in here as to the issuance of these anticipated.